This week on Potlatch, music from a Native American group called Zit, and an interview with two members of the Salmi people. Those are Laplanders from Scandinavia. Thank you. It's a group called Zit and Canyon Records album featuring William Bluehouse Johnson, Max Suazo, and Tom B., who also wrote the words and music to Christopher Columbus. He's a European who got a little lost and wound up in the wrong place, but became famous for it. Speaking of Europeans, last October at the Cross-Cultural Educational Conference, I interviewed Jan Keskitalo and Anton Hoem. And both of these gentlemen are white Europeans. They're also natives, and they're also educators. They attended the conference as representatives of the Sauma people, Laplanders to us, a native group in Northern Europe whose lifestyle is similar to that of Alaska natives. I asked Jan Keskitalo whether there was a controversy among developers and subsistence hunters in his country, in Norway, and here was his reply.
Yes, we have got some controversies. One, for example, is that we've got a new route from one main village in the interior of Finnmark to another main village in the other part. Then we got some questions from the people living outside the villages. What shall we do now? We know that we will have a big traffic of tourists into this area. They will go fishing, hunting, and they will collect berries in our traditional areas. Then the native people want to own the land in one way, all the land in Finnmark is owned by government, but the native people try to make some kind of agreement with the government. The government may give them the land to the people to use it. They say you will have the permission to use the land by yourself, and you will also have permission to tell the tourists or those people who are coming from other areas into your area if you want to have them there or not. You have to make decisions at your own whether you will let them fish and collect berries or not.
A native group can say that visitors should not hunt and fish, but if they do, how do you stop them from doing that?
The government pays some kind of security forces to control that no one is going to do anything against the permissions the people living in the areas have got. Yeah.
Are these security forces people hired from outside the area or inside the area?
They are almost hired from the inside of the area, but some of them are hired from outside.
I would like to ask each of you whether the schools should train children for subsistence or whether it should train them to be urban citizens or should it train them to do both?
Well, in my opinion, it isn't. You can't do anything else than both. You have to start with the children's surrounding, with their homes, their milieu, their own culture, and to develop it and make the children able to behave as a Sama, for instance. But it also means that if you don't do so, you will not be successful in developing an urban person of Sama. You have to start with their own thing, you have to develop their own culture. If you are succeeding in that, you are succeeding in making a Sama to be an urban citizen too.
Yes, I agree in that.
Is it possible, you're suggesting that the education take an integrative approach, but from what Ingmar Egede said yesterday, students grow up with almost split personalities culturally. They're neither one nor the other. Has this been your experience with education in with the Sami people, for example?
Well, I think the situation in Greenland and in northernmost Norway is different. You don't have such big differences between the local communities and the urban center in Norway as you have it in Denmark and Greenland. So I think the problem there is harder to solve than it is in Norway. But I am quite sure that we have had some of that kind of problem in Norway too. But it hasn't, as far as I know, had the same hard or serious consequences as it has in Greenland. And it also means that it is easier for us to solve that kind of problems, solve them during educational reforms, for instance. Jan, who is sitting beside me, is working at a teacher training college in Alta. It's a new college. And the aim to erect that college was to make such programs that would make it possible for children or the young people of the Sami ethnon to stay there as Sami, at the same time to be able to function in the urban Norwegian community or the state. And it means that, in my opinion, that it is possible to live as a Sami and as a Norwegian at the same time. It isn't an antagonism thing to do. It is quite possible to be a Sami and a member of the Norwegian society.
And even if you live in the urban area, you can go back to a subsistence way of life if you choose.
Yes, today you can do it. You have a movement, I think you have it in the States too, the Green Movement. And it has had the impact on the government that they are more willing to develop technology and to give different ways of economic support that will make it possible for the young one to live as comfortably in the small places, to have the same standard of technology there as in the urban center, and to have the same basic services out in the small places as you have it in the center. And in the small places you wouldn't have all the kind of problems which you have in the urban centers. So that's what we are trying to do in Norway. I don't say that we have been successful in, but it's what we are trying to do now. And I think it's just what the Sami people themselves are trying to do. It's what they are thinking of at the Sami Institute in Kautokeino. I am a member of the board for just that institute. So I know what they are thinking of, what they are planning. And some of those program is just to make it clear how it is possible to stay in the small places and have the same standard of technology, the same economic abilities or resources, and combine it with good qualities in the old life in those small places. That's what they are thinking of and trying to develop possibilities for, to combine just those two main qualities. good qualities of the modern society and the good qualities of the old society.
How do you get government to respond? Does the leadership start from the people and work to the government, or does it start with the government and work to the people?
The government in Norway too has been criticized that they have not been able to understand the Sami people, and they were a hard criticism, especially in the 40s and the 50s. But since the 60s, I think the situation has changed. What the reason is, the reason behind the change, I don't know exactly, but I think Norway is a small country. Almost everyone knows each other. It gives the common man quite a good opportunity to control the politicians and the governments too. I think it's one of the great advantages to be a citizen of a small country, especially when the country is in that situation which Norway is today. Norway is a rich country. We can afford to do social experiments and try to develop the country in a way that gives all members of the society better life opportunities. It's two things. Norway is a small country. Norway is a rich country. I think it's one of the crucial points if you're going to understand what's happening in Norway today.
In your opinion, can we get the Alaskan government to respond to the people, or is the distance, geographic distance, too great?
Well, in my opinion, I think you have all the opportunities here in Alaska to make a good country for the people here. And I am quite sure that such a seminar, which Jan and I is taking part of, is one of the means to develop the country. Here you will get ideas. We are collecting ideas from Alaska, and maybe it's something you can learn from listening to us. And in my opinion, all the people I have met here is very interesting to get ideas how to improve their own country to be a good place to live in.
Are there more differences or similarities between Alaska and here from what you've seen and from where you're from?
Well, the main difference is that you are not such a state-regulated society as as Norway is. It's the Norwegian government, I think, has much more to say about the development of the society than the government here has. In a popular way, you can say that you are in a capitalistic society. It means that each place has much more opportunity to do it in their own way, and it can be a good thing. It can also make it more difficult to plan the development of the whole society. Maybe we are overplanned in Norway, but it has some good qualities too. It gives the people or the government opportunity to coordinate, to try to put new ideas in life, to work with the people in quite another systematic way than maybe it's possible to do on that level here in Alaska. But I am not an expert on Alaska. It's just an impression I have got. So maybe I'm taking totally wrong, but I think one of the main differences between Alaska and Norway is that you are not so regulated, so planned as Norway is.
Well, I could add something about the similarities in the educational system. From my point of view, we have got some similarities, and it's very good for us to have an opportunity to just come together and to discuss, and maybe in the future we are able to to also to cooperate in problem solving about making educational reforms.
Do you think that our northern climate is that an important similarity?
I think it's one of the main reasons why it is easy to understand or to see the problems here, that you are living under much the same natural conditions that we are in Scandinavia. But it's also interesting to see, just for that reason, how different we are solving some of the problems. For instance, how different, take just a little thing, how different you are building the houses here and in Scandinavia. We have quite another kind of houses. And in spite of, we are living in much the same weather conditions.
How are the houses different?
Well, I think in Norway you built a house for to stay there for 100 years or more. It's very, very heavily built, and it's very warm and so on. For me, the houses here in Fairbanks, at least, is well. I can't think that they have mentioned that it shall stay for 100 years, maybe for 10 years. So it is much lighter. It's it's quite different from what I have family with back home.
Jan Keskitalo and Anton Hoem, who are Sauma people, known to us as Laplanders, they attended a cross-cultural education conference at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks last October. Both of these gentlemen are both native and white. Interesting combination. And facing problems similar to Alaska natives. Next, music from Gordon Lightfoot.
Go first in the world, go forth with your fears. Remember, a price must be paid. Be always too soon, be never too fast. It's a time when all bets must be laid. Beware of the darkness, be kind to your children. Remember the woman who waits. And the house you live in will never fall down if you pity the stranger stands at your gate. When you're caught by the gale and you're full under sail, beware of the dangers below. And the song that you sing not be too sad, and be sure not to sing it too slow. You come in the face of all common disgraces and know what they're doing it for. And the house you live in will never fall down if you pity the stranger stands at your door. When you're out on the road and feeling quite lost, consider the burden of things. And he who is wise will not criticize when other men fail at the game. Beware of strange faces in dark, dingy places. Be careful while bending the law. And the house you live in will never fall down if you pity the stranger stands at your door. When you're down in the dumps and not ready to deal, decide what it is that you need. Is it money or love? Is it learning to live? Or is it the mouth you must be? Be known as a man who will always be candid on that do not relate. And the house you live in will never fall down if you pity the stranger stands at the gate. And the house you live in will never fall down if you pity the stranger stands at the gate.
Gordon Lightfoot. By the time you hear this program, flood season should be over for, we hope, another year in state of Alaska, particularly the interior villages. Snow and melting ice usually causes most of our floods here in Alaska. Elsewhere in the world, cutting down trees may cause floods, as we hear in this report from Radio Canada International.
The 23,000 square miles of usable timber on the eastern slopes of the Rockies is being cut down at the rate of about 1% each year. That's creating up to 200 square miles stripped of timber every 12 months. The aesthetic impact is immediately visible, but there are other hidden effects which could be more devastating. One of these is the effect on water resources. One tree consumes around 12 liters of groundwater a day, using 1 or 2% for growth and returning the rest to the air. With the trees gone, there's about 60% more water remaining in the ground, which then increases the flow into rivers and streams. The levels of water in rivers and lakes are partly controlled by timber cutting practices at the sources of the rivers and along their length. Researchers have also found that if the forest is cut down in strips, at right angles to the prevailing wind, snow drifts are caught in the open spaces. When the snow melts, it adds to the groundwater and increases the supply of water to the rivers and lakes. In a 25-year project to manage the eastern slopes of the Rockies for water production, researchers have found out how to change water flows through land use practices. That agreement expired in 1973, and now, although the technology is available, there is no political instrument to manage our inland water resource in this or any other part of Canada. The situation now on the eastern slopes is this. The forested mountain lands, producing 95% of the water for the whole watershed area, are controlled by the Alberta Forest Service, with a priority on the production of timber. Once into non-forested areas, the stream's flow is monitored by Alberta Water Resources, who can predict floods and water shortages and introduce dams, but not alter the amount of water coming down from the mountain forest. When the water crosses a provincial boundary, it becomes a federal responsibility, while the surrounding lands are the responsibility of the new province. The watershed fed from the eastern slopes of the Rockies extends through three provinces to Hudson Bay in northern Manitoba. A constitutional nightmare. Since the agreement between the provincial and federal governments lapsed in 1973, there is no one body responsible for our inland water resources, either for preventing flooding from increased spring runoff from areas clear-cut of timber, or for managing our water for irrigation, power, recreation, or for disposal of pollutants. Unless governments can reinstitute an intergovernmental agreement on inland water resources, we could all be in our basements with galoshes. This is Leslie Bala in Edmonton.
That report thanks to Radio Canada International. Next to the village of Minto, where the villagers sing for us Neil Charlie's song. On location, around the campfire, Minto, Alaska. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.